chick invited me to go to this jazz club in Soho called Ronnie Scott's in London. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I don't think it's gonna be open. I did not know who I was dealing with. It's Chick Corea. He just makes a call. It's open. And they'd set out three pianos in a room facing each other. And we walked in this room, we sat down, and Chick would play a few notes. Herbie had joined in, I'd join in. And we kind of each took it at turns in leading this thing. This song went on for hours. It changed, it evolved, it moved. It was the most amazing thing. And Herbie said something really, really amazing. He was like, you know, because even though we didn't say anything to each other, I like know these people in this moment. I know them, I feel them. Like there's something happening. And so here's the super geek moment is he said something in it and it really resonates with me. He's like, you know, music's not about the sound, right? The sound is carrying an intention.
Welcome to Audio Branding, the hidden gem of marketing. Sound plays a more important role in human behavior and our decision-making than you may realize. In this podcast, I'll help you understand the art and science of sound so you can better influence others in business and your life. I'm your host, Jody Krangle. Let's delve a little deeper. Here's the first part of my conversation with Stephen Ridley. My next guest is a world-renowned British pianist, composer, and visionary in modern piano education. His journey from a high-flying investment banker to a global musical sensation is as remarkable as his performances. At the age of 2, he discovered his passion for the piano, receiving formal training at 11, but it wasn't until he left the corporate world that his true artistry flourished. Beginning as a street performer on the streets of London, his raw talent and electrifying performances quickly garnered international attention, propelling him onto some of the world's most prestigious stages. His name is Stephen Ridley, and this discussion will range from how music connects us and transcends language to how it prolongs our lives. Talk about the power of sound. Keep listening for some interesting and practical tips. As always, if you have questions for my guest, you're welcome to reach out through the links in the show notes. If you have questions for me, visit audiobrandingpodcast.com where you'll find a lot of ways to get in touch. Plus, subscribing to the newsletter will let you know when the new podcasts are available, along with other interesting bits of audio-related news. And if you're getting some value from listening, the best ways to show your support are to share this podcast with a friend and leave an honest review. Both those things really help, and I'd love to feature your review on future podcasts. You can leave one either in written or in voice format from the podcast's main page. I would so appreciate that. And now, here's my conversation with Stephen Ridley.
Thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it, Stephen. I know you are a very busy guy, especially now. You're doing a lot of touring, right?
Yeah, it's wild. But mm-hmm. I'm very happy to be here. I love your podcast, and I brought my best audio setup. Hopefully, I can live up to the name.
You're doing great.
Thank you.
We had our producer, Sean, give it the thumbs up. We're all good.
that's the only thumbs I care about.
Yeah, that's true. So I love to start these podcasts with a question to you. If you could tell me a story about an early memory of how sound moved you, that would be great.
I can give you my earliest one. It jumped out when you asked the question right there. I remember, look, my dad was he was a really violent guy. He was quick to anger. He'd had a bit of a dark past, a rough upbringing in the north of England. And he had demons. Like, it was very clear. You meet this guy, the guy's got demons. And he was this kind of troubled soul. He'd be angry, but then he doesn't want to be. And then he'd regret it. And he'd do things. And then he feels bad. And then there's this, like, silence that can last for hours. And it was a really... It was weird because I remember being a kid thinking, I don't have that. Like, whatever that is very, well, what is that? And what's this thing that keeps possessing my dad? And then I remember my dad, and we were in the kitchen. I remember everything. I remember we're talking about sound. I remember the sound more than I remember the image. And it was this old cassette player. And I'd found a bunch of cassettes in the loft. And these were cassettes that my dad had made for my mum when they first met. And I didn't know that. But it was this box of cassettes. You know, cassettes, they used to be kept in this like suitcase, these leather suitcases, right? So I open the suitcase and I grab one of these cassettes, and I put in the cassette and it plays In the Ghetto by Elvis Presley. And his mother cries in the ghetto. And it was haunting. But the most amazing thing of this was I saw it change my dad. And he went into this other person, a much more beautiful, calm, serene sort of English version of Elvis. He sort of became a bit Elvis. And he was singing to my mom, and they were sweet and romantic together. And I was like, what is this superpower? What is this? And I felt it as a listener. I felt it. But my biggest enjoyment was like, I could never do anything to calm my dad down. Like when he was on, he was, but somehow whatever this was that I found on this cassette had this magic juice. And it's a magic which I've now come to know intimately. And I get to go around the world and share that magic with people. And I've seen it now just millions of times. It's so amazing to me. You can walk into a room that's serious and heavy and people full of their worries, and through the power of song, the power of sound, you heal people. They just get better. It's stark and kind of amazing.
It is very amazing. Yeah, I love that story. I am sorry to hear about the demons, but the power of sound is it's very powerful, and it does change people.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's nice to know that has been something in your life that has now shaped who you've become.
Always.
Because yeah, so you have a background in sound. I mean, was your dad musical, or was this just a hobby of his? Or
no, it's weird. I come from a village in the north of England. Uh-huh. There was 40 people in my village.
Okay.
Nobody was a musician, at least of all me. But we all loved music. It was a very musical village. And I remember, I know what my neighbors listened to. It's funny. Like, my mom loved Dolly Parton. My neighbor loved Metallica.
Oh, that's a different.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a different sound.
Yeah. There was a guy called Michael at the end of the street, and he used to listen to all this like very classical music from composers with complicated names like Prokofiev. And it was weird. Like every house had its own personality because of that. And the reason is because in the countryside, not much is happening, but you have all this space. You can make as much noise as you want, and people live a pretty outdoorsy life. And it's nice to have a soundtrack to it, right? And so nobody was really a musician, but music was everywhere. And I found that to be the most inspiring part of where I lived, because with music, I could be anywhere. I hated living in the countryside, to be totally honest. It was claustrophobic, but there's nothing to do, nowhere to go. There was no other children. The youngest person after me was my dad, and he traveled all the time. So I was just bored. I wanted to live. I wanted to experience. I wanted adventure. And I would find that in songs. I could close my eyes and listen to the Rolling Stones' Miss You, and I was suddenly in this smoke-filled velvet room. And I could listen to Meatloaf, Bat Out of Hell, and I'm just on the biggest stage in the world, and I'm dancing on my bed and having the best time. I could listen to You Raise Me Up by Westlife, and I'm missing a love that I've never even had yet. And that's the power of music to me. It's the sound of my dreams. It's truly like it gives me aspiration. And it's still that for me. It's my healing. It's my dream juice. It's my everything. I love music, and I love how much it allows me to contribute to the dream. You know what I mean? Like in a movie, it just gives you the whole picture. But music to me is similar to a book. It gives you, it directs you in the direction of an emotion, but it lets you fill in the picture. And so everybody has their own image when they listen to Adele Rolling in the Deep. Everybody's got their own kind of connection with that. The only commonality is that song has a magic because 80,000 people stand in a room and it means so much to them. But, you know, I'm sure if you surveyed 1,000 people, like, what were you thinking of? What's your thing? Everybody's got a different painting that they've painted with that brush that she gave.
Yeah.
And that's the magic of sound to me.
It is totally magic. Yeah. I kind of liken it to the way that people wear perfume or cologne, because it changes with your body chemistry.
Yeah, there you go.
Like the actual like scent itself. So, all of our minds are different. All of us are going in different places, and all of us have different lived experiences. And those songs, the music brings us to a different place. It brings everyone to a different place. So yeah, it is a kind of magic. I agree.
Yeah.
So how did you get from being in the countryside and being bored to being on stages playing piano? What was that progression like?
Well, you know, I just did I did a class for my students, and I was talking about the importance of boredom, because I still now I'll engineer, because I learned how valuable it is. I'll deliberately go and put myself in places to be bored with a piano, because you know you'll start out. So first, to answer your question, I it was a New Year's Eve. I was 3 years old, and to shut me up because I was being really mardy and upset and stroppy, my dad's friend gave me his son's little 2-octave keyboard and a pair of headphones. And in my universe, like, it was 3 a.m., like 6 hours just passed like that. I was instantly in love. Whatever this was, I didn't know how to play it. I didn't know what to do with it, but I had real time back and forth feelings with it. There's something special about this object. It's not like a plate or a towel. It's an object, but there's something mysterious and magic about this. I don't know what it is. I don't know how to use it, but you just gave me a wand and I'm going to play with it until I know what to do. And so I would sit and play with my wand. He let me keep it. I don't think there was much of a choice. I wasn't giving it him back. And so he sent me home with this keyboard, and I'd play and I'd play and I'd play. But because I had the luxury of boredom, which is a luxury that I think a lot of people, especially in like the iPad world, could have more of.
Yeah, not everyone has that.
Yeah.
That's true.
It let me wander. It let me explore. It let me like, oh, this sucks. Let me try this. Oh, wow, that's quite nice. I wonder if I can make it better. Ding, ding, no. Oh, ding, ding. Oh, maybe. Ding, ding. And I'm not running somewhere else just because it's hard, because there's nothing else to do. I can't just instantly go, oh, this is hard. I'm going to go on YouTube. Oh, this is hard. I'm just going to go watch Netflix. Oh, this is hard. I'm going to get the next distraction. Like the process I learned piano was not one I would recommend. It was unnecessarily painful, but I had enough boredom to allow a curiosity to grow and to follow that curiosity. And then I'd discover magic. And because of that, I kind of developed my own style. And that's now what I go around the world sharing with people. And now I go on stages and I play, and it's the most wonderful thing. It really is. I just flew back from Dubai. I'm 7 shades of jet lag right now, but I just flew back from Dubai. I did this amazing show in a place called Dubai Expo. It's like this big cathedral place with projections on the walls, and it's bigger than Madison Square Gardens, but this huge dome, like, like you're in, I mean, it's really something. And the acoustics in there were just insane. And I got there a couple of days before, and I was like, okay, I want to play something unique for this venue. And again, same thing. I was like, I gotta somehow block out everything to give myself enough time to get bored in this place. And so I organized to be there throughout the night. And from 2 a.m. until 8 a.m., I sat there in this big dome on a piano, noodling and wandering and finding, oh, that's cool. Oh, can I make it better? Oh, ah. And I came up with something, and then I just played it, and it's the same thing. I'm doing the same thing. Nothing's changed. And to me, that's the magic, because I feel like Christopher Columbus. I'm like, I know magic's here somewhere. Let me find it. And it's really fun to do that. And that's why I play with my eyes closed. I'm listening, you know?
Thanks for taking the time to listen. Quick question. Do you know anyone else who could benefit from hearing more about how powerful sound can be? If so, would you mind sharing this podcast with them? It would mean so much to me. Now, I'll stop interrupting and let you get back to the show.
And you play very percussion-like, right?
Yeah,
I've seen a few videos, and it was really amazing to watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
But you did some busking before you got into the whole big concert thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So how was that? Because that's hard, isn't it? Like,
yeah.
You don't know who's listening.
So to walk you through that moment, I'd left the village. I'd gone to uni. My dad died. We had no money at all. All I wanted to do was get out of poverty, because there was no dignity in poverty at all. And I didn't like the position all my family was in now. And my brother was in the military. My mom works in a government hospital. And it was just really on me. And so I was like, okay, I don't know how to make money. I don't know anything about that. But everything everybody tells me is work hard at school and get a good job. So I worked hard at school, and I went to this really fancy university, and I got great grades and triple first class honors, and ended up getting a top job in a top investment bank. And I thought, oh my God, I've made it. and I go to this job and I'm miserable. I hate, this is not me. Like, this is not me. And it took a lot of courage to walk away from that because I had no safety net. I had no idea what I was going to do. I had no plan. I just knew. I just held my dad dying in my arms. He had a heart attack suddenly one day. We were supposed to go on holiday. And the biggest thing that my dad taught me when he died is that, you know, I'm next. I'm the next generation. And he didn't plan on this. And his heart was full of a lot of one days. One day I'm going to do this. One day I'm going to do this. And I don't want to be that guy. I love my dad, but I don't want to be that guy. And I'm sitting here in this office and I'm starting to think that way. Well, one day I'll leave and one day I'll do this and one day I'll go live my life. That isn't it. That isn't what inspires me. That isn't what I admire. I don't admire people that live that way. It's so fearful. And so with really no idea what I was going to do, I quit. I walked 20 minutes later down a street. I saw a piano in an old vintage store. And I was like, oh, that's just what I need right now. I didn't plan any of this. I walk into the shop. I start playing. I remember exactly what I was playing. It's this Chilly Gonzalez song called Dot. It's a beautiful song. I'm playing this song and I'm like instantly like in that place. And then the big dude comes in and interrupts me who smells of stale alcohol. And he goes, hey, you want to play that piano? You've got to buy it. And it was £100. I was like, all right, I'll buy it. And I gave him the £100. He's like, right, now you've got to get it out of the shop. And he helped me carry this big acoustic, like twice the size of this thing behind me, helped me carry this big acoustic piano outside the front of his store and then walked in the store. And I was like, well, now what am I going to do? And I thought,
well, you have a piano.
I've got a piano and I want to play it. And I'm just going to play it. But you know, Jody, it's the weirdest thing. I sat down and I was petrified. I'd not been scared like that ever. Like I was physically overcome by fear. And so you ask like about playing in the street. Yeah, initially it was like paralyzing. I can't explain it. It was just so clear to me that nobody wants to listen to this. Everybody's running for their train. They're running for the bus. They're late for work. And I'm going to share the most personal thing. I'm like, what? This is so weird. And I pulled up my collar. I had a big pea coat. I pulled up my collar and it like comes up to here. And then I pulled down my hat over my eyebrows so he could barely see me. And I closed my eyes and I'd hunch up in this question mark position and I just started playing. And I was playing and playing and playing and I suddenly get this like feeling of like, wow, I feel like there's somebody behind me. I feel like I might be in danger. And then I suddenly think, hold on a minute. I'm sitting on one of the dodgiest streets in London in my Prada suit with the Rolex. And I was like, oh my God, I'm such a mug. Like, I'm gonna get robbed, like for sure. What am I thinking? This is so stupid. I'm like playing an anthem to attract all the guys to come and knife me. Oh my God, what am I? But then I realized, well, they've not done it yet. So, you know, let me finish my song and then I'm gonna turn around and.
Yeah, they didn't want to interrupt you.
Well, whatever was gonna happen hadn't happened yet. And I thought, okay, well, whatever this song's doing is doing it. So I'm gonna finish this and then I'm gonna jump around. And I'm going to turn really fast. And this has become like a thing that and I'll do this in my concerts. And this is where it came from. It came from this moment where I play up the piano really fast. And then I turn around and I punch the bottom of the piano. And I'm doing that to be scary. And then I'm like, all right. So I go, punch, and turn around. And there's like 600 people standing there in total silence like this. And I'm quiet and they're quiet. This is normally like one of the busiest streets and it's silent and there's just this moment, you know, silence is sometimes the best sound in the world. And the space between the notes, as Miles Davis said, I'm just experiencing the richest silence. And I'm like, wow, what is this? And then I just burst out crying. First time in my life, I genuinely cried. I forced myself to cry at my dad's funeral. And it wasn't that I wasn't upset. I just, for whatever reason, my body couldn't cry. I was like so in shock. But this was like convulsive. Yeah. I couldn't stop it. It just erupted. I could not hold it in. And I don't know what's going on. And I'm crying and crying. All these people are coming up to me. They're so nice. They're hugging me. They're telling me their stories. Nobody had ever done that. Like, what is this? And again, like, it's that power of music I was talking about in my kitchen when I'm 3 years old watching my dad. But somehow now I was the dude who'd given it. And so it created that reaction in people. And I see the best side of humanity. I see the very best side of these people. Maybe they're like normally really angry. Maybe they're like terrible bosses or, you know, but in that moment, they show me their best side. That's the magic for me of being a musician. And I felt all the love of humanity, and it was absolutely amazing. And then I was awkward. I didn't know what to do. I'm English, right? I don't know what to do. We don't know what to do with all that affection.
Too much emotion.
Yeah. So I was like, what do I do? This is overwhelming. And I threw my hat on the floor, and it filled up. It filled up with coins and notes. I was like, what is going on? What is this?
Well, there you go. That's a sign from up above about what you should be doing.
Yeah.
If I ever heard one.
Yeah. And basically then that's how in that moment I just thought, okay, let me give it a shot. And I played that piano that day until 1 o'clock in the morning. Started at 11 a.m. I went to bed and all I could think about was, man, I hope the police don't move it. And so I naturally woke up at 5 a.m. I ran to this piano, hoping that hadn't been moved, and it hadn't been moved. I was like, oh, thank gosh. And then I played it again all day from 8 a.m. when you can make noise in London through to 1 a.m. again. And I did that every single day with not one day off for 9 months. And
wow, that's dedication.
It's passion. It's love. It's
I guess it felt good.
I couldn't think of anything else I wanted to do. Like, what else? What other activity do I have where 5 minutes at a time, I am Mick Jagger? For 5 minutes at a time, I get to block a street.
Yeah.
I meet a bunch of people who would otherwise not even care about me. They all come up to me and it's hugs and love and invites all over the world. You've got to come here. You've got to come here. I've got a record label in Paris. I've got a bar in New York. I've got an ashram in India. I've got a tiki club in Australia. You've got to come and play. You've got to come and play. And I'm like, what is going on? Like, this is so cool. And then they leave, and then you're by yourself in the street and you play, and the same thing happens over and over and over. And that's an addictive kind of thing. And I fell in love with the craft. I couldn't sing, by the way. When I started doing that, I couldn't sing at all. I wasn't that good on piano, to be totally honest. But I had this iterative process where 5 minutes at a time, I got to see what works. What causes people to laugh? What causes people to cry? What causes people to stop? And I'm working on my craft and I'm loving it. And I'm loving and it's still, I still play in the streets, by the way. I just don't, I tend not to tell people that much anymore, but every now and then I'll talk about it. Like,
you just appear.
Yeah, I just appear, but sometimes I'll put it on Instagram. I'm going to be here. And then, I learned my lesson. The last time I did that was in Kiev, and right before the invasion. And I said, I'm going to play in this park called Shevchenko Park. And I put it on Instagram. I'm going to play in the park. And 15,000 people came in, and then people were like abandoning their cars in the street to come to this thing. And then the whole central city roadway stopped working. So then helicopters started coming. It was like the most wild thing. And then that got a bit hairy. So that's the last time I'll do it that way. But it's still a magic, if I'm in an airport, I see one of those pianos, I'm on it. Trust me. Like, I'll miss a flight. I don't care. Like, that's, there's some magic to playing for people when they don't expect it. It's really a rush. It's really cool.
And I love that. Yeah. And it sounds to me like you're doing active listening every 5 minutes you're playing.
I listen more than I play.
Astounding. Like, that's reacting to the audience that's listening to you on that deep a level is really impressive. So
yeah,
well done, first of all. And secondly, well done for improving your craft over time, like having that passion to really go at it and do everything that you possibly can to be better for the people listening. Like, that's, and for yourself, right?
Yeah.
To be able to achieve more with what you're producing, which I gather is a passion and a lot of fun for you, I would imagine.
Yeah, look, sometimes it's super frustrating, but you're absolutely right. It's, a lot of people say, like, oh, who's your favorite artist? And this sounds so egocentric, what I'm about to say, but I'm really inspired by what I think I could be if I just keep going. It's
sure.
Like, that's my favorite artist is probably me in about, just give me a few hours or a few days or a few weeks. Like,
yep.
Let me just try and get there. Because it's like the beauty of when you're playing piano is it's like you custom make the music that you want to hear. Like, I get to make the thing I most like. And so, of course, that's going to be my favorite music because I get to make it exactly for me. And, it's like you tailor your own suit. Of course, that's going to fit the best.
Of course. Do you have a favorite song of yours that you just love playing that evolved over through this process?
I do, actually. I so very If you ask me that question in 5 minutes, Jody, I'm going to have a different answer. My favorite song changes
sure,
literally with
but,
the wind.
But right now, in this moment.
Right now, in this moment. I'm saying that because you can probably find a bunch of interviews where people have asked that question and I'll give a different answer every time. But I really mean it in the moment. Like, so right now, in this moment, my favorite song is probably Hallelujah. And but that's because I did a live class on Sunday. We had over 1,000 people there. And somebody asked me, play a favorite song. And in that flash moment, it was Hallelujah. And I wanted to prove to people how easy it can be. So I was like, look, I'm going to play this song with one hand. I'm going to show you how easy, like, you don't need to be some Marvel genius to get the magic of music. I'm going to play this show with five fingers. I'm only going to play five notes. And I played this like really stripped back Hallelujah. And by doing that, it lets the voice like take center stage a little bit. And man, that was haunting. Like goosebumps playing it. Every now and then I'll play a song and I've got goosebumps playing it. I'm like, this is the moment. And I've played it. I've been playing it since then. I played it yesterday. I played it today. And there's something about that song. It's so, so powerful.
And yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That would be my answer for today.
Well, that's great. So you love it because you can strip it down to almost nothing and it still has the same meaning? Is that what I'm getting
here? I can strip any song down to nothing. And if it's a great song, it will have the meaning that it's got. I was just doing that as an exercise to show these students, look, you can get here in 3 days. In 3 days, you can do what I'm about to do. But look at the power of it. Look at the magic. And Hallelujah is so easy to sing. You basically sing it in your speaking voice. I heard there was a secret chord. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need to be Aretha Franklin to sing this song.
Yeah.
So look, like, immediately you can do what I'm about to do. And that was the point I was trying to make to them. But what I realized in playing it, I mean, why do I love that song? I think it's so genius on so many levels. For example, the opening verse is telling you how to play the song. And there's some magic about these chords. And he literally says, I heard there was a secret chord that Jesus came. And it goes like this, the fourth, the fifth, the minor fall, then the major lift. I'm like, it's telling you how to play it. They're the lyrics, and that's what you do when you're doing it. I'm like, oh my, it's so genius. And I'm like, what? This is so cool. And the baffled king composed, which I'm like, and you feel like that when you're playing it. Like, what is this? This, you feel like this divinity when you're playing that song. And there's a lot of pieces of music, by the way. There's certain pieces of music, I'm like, whoa. There's certain pieces of music just feel religious. It's the weirdest thing. Like, you know, there's certain music, like, wow. And I've had that again as an audience. I remember as a kid, we were in Memphis and I went to Al Green's gospel church and I was so moved. I'd never been in a gospel church. I don't even know, I wasn't particularly well read on the Bible. I don't know anything that this is about. And I was so moved because there was something about that music. There was something about that. And then again, now sometimes I'm like, there's just certain combinations of notes that I'm like, whoa. And Hallelujah's definitely got that. So that's,
there are people who think that there is a divine chord, that there is a wavelength, I guess, that or wavelengths that can actually inspire us as human beings, that vibration just makes itself so known in our being that we can't ignore it. And yeah, I think that's probably partially at least what you were experiencing.
Do you want to sound your absolute best when you're being interviewed on a podcast or when you're hosting your own show? I have a podcast episode and free downloadable worksheet called Sounding Your Best as a Podcast Guest off of the audiobrandingpodcast.com main page. Just click on the little square graphic to the left of the player displaying my podcast trailer. It gives you some comprehensive suggestions for where to start or for improving the sound you already have, including the type of microphones to consider and why, ideas for soundproofing your recording environment, and suggestions on how to get the best sound when you're being remotely recorded on services like Riverside FM or Squadcast. Don't let bad audio quality hold you back from being the best podcast guest or host you can be. And of course, if you happen to need voiceover for your intro and outro, feel free to get in touch. I'm happy to help. And now, back to the podcast.
I have a theory about this. Mm-hmm. This is going to sound cuckoo.
Go for it. All about the sound here. You tell me whatever.
Okay. Well, I really love maths, right? And I've always loved maths. I've always been quite good at maths. And sound, if we break down what is happening, what's coming out of a piano, what's coming out of a voice when we sing, what is sound? Sound is air vibrating. And we give, how do we differentiate the different kinds of sounds? How do we tell this one from this one from this one? Well, what we do is we look at how many times does that air vibrate in a second. And we have a word for that. It's called frequency. How frequently does it vibrate in a second? And the number of vibrations per second, we call that hertz. It's named after Heidrich Hertz. And so 40 vibrations a second would be 40 hertz. And this note is 440 vibrations a second. Whether I do it with the piano or my voice, it's the same, 440 vibrations a second. So now I'm going to go full nerd. If there is a divine chord, and I think there's more than one, I really think there is. But this is where we're going to get really cool. Okay, this is super geek, but I'm just a geek, so deal with me. This is 440, right? If I go up one octave, that's 880 hertz. If I go up again, that doubles again. It doubles in every octave. And so what you see is the piano is this 12, it looks like 88 notes, but it's not. It's these 12 notes that repeat and repeat and repeat. And each time they repeat, the number of vibrations exactly doubles. Okay? Now, here's where we get really magic. The piano stops a certain point, but we can keep going. And if you keep going and you keep going and you keep going, eventually you would reach such a high number of vibrations a second, it would tend towards the infinite. It would, you can theoretically think at some point you're going to come close to infinity. Which, by the way, if you look at the derivation of the word infinity, it comes from the divine, the endless, the eternal. Like, it's got that. So I'm like, okay, so then you can work down as well. So if I work here, that's 880. So a harmonic of 880, meaning something which is mathematically related to it. 440, if I go down again. 220, if I go down again. 110, it halves. So you could imagine what would be a divine chord. Well, you get something which starts out the original frequency, if you like, the original vibration, the universe, the vibrations, these things that hippies say where you think they sound weird. I was like, well, what if they're not weird? What if there is actually these like very high frequencies? And we kind of intuitively say that in our language without knowing it. Oh, he's on a higher frequency. That's kind of a higher frequency. I've had too much. People say this stuff, but I'm like, well, what if it's true, right? And what if there are these like higher frequencies? Well, how would we access them? Well, a great way to access them would be you'd play a harmonic of them. Because interestingly, on a piano, if I press this, all of the other, that's a note called A, all of the other A's on the piano also vibrate. And so you get the note you play, and then you get something called harmonics. And the other A's on the piano also vibrate because 440 makes these other harmonics, makes these other mathematically related frequencies also vibrate. They vibrate less, which is why you don't hear them as strongly. But if you're mixing sound and you remove the 440, you can hear the other harmonics are vibrating. Well, but then other harmonics must also vibrate. The higher ones, the higher ones, the higher ones. And I genuinely think, again, this is totally Stephen's conspiracy theory here, but probably that is, there's a real thing there. There's probably a real scientific thing where you could look and say, well, when we play these notes, we are literally then harmonics much higher than even our ability to hear also occur. And that's what we experience. And that's why sometimes, and I've had this millions of times, and it's not just me, so I've audiences all over the world, and I've played in over 70 countries. I play for people that don't even speak the same language as me. Mm-hmm. And there's some things I play and it makes everybody cry. There's some things I play and it makes everybody stand to attention and be quiet. There is one arpeggio which I play and it blocks the street anywhere in the world. And I've done it in India, I've done it in Brazil, I've done it in New York, I've done it in London, I've done it in Russia, in the Red Square. And I open every show with that arpeggio now because it produces this thing where people just go, it does something. And that's, I'm like, I don't, this is my best explanation for like how you might explain something like that.
Yeah, definitely a universal language. Also, I know, and I can't remember what the name of it is, if you play a note and you put sand or water over it, it makes a pattern.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So what I think is happening there is that we are mostly water and we are vibrating to that tune. I mean, it's not that drastic a change, but I think it is affecting us in ways that maybe we're not able to see with the naked eye, you know?
I agree. Would you like to go one layer deeper?
Sure.
I did not expect to go here today, but you've tapped into my most geeky part. Okay, we're mostly water, fair enough. But there's something non-physical that's occurring with music. And it was I was having a conversation with Herbie Hancock about this. The great Herbie Hancock. Who knows how many Grammys? They ran out of Grammys to give this guy. Originally in this Miles Davis sort of lineup. This is one of the legends of music. And he played a show with Chick Corea, also 60-plus Grammys, legend of legends. And afterwards, I was lucky enough, Chick invited me to go to this jazz club in Soho called Ronnie Scott's in London. And it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. I was like, I don't think it's going to be open. I did not know who I was dealing with. It's Chick Corea. He just makes a call. It's open. And they'd set out three pianos in a room facing each other. And we walked in this room. We sat down and Chick would play a few notes. Herbie would join in. I'd join in. And we kind of each took it at turns in leading this thing. This song went on for hours. It changed, it evolved, it moved. It was the most amazing thing. And Herbie said something really, really amazing. He was like, you know, because even though we didn't say anything to each other, I like know these people in this moment. I know them, I feel them. Like there's something happening. And so here's the super geek moment is he said something in it and it really resonates with me. He's like, you know, music's not about the sound. Right? The sound is carrying an intention. And that intention comes from you to the audience directly. It's like it's a spiritual thing. I'm like, okay, but I don't really know what that means. Like, what does that mean? And I've thought about it. And I had the epiphany a few months ago. I was at this event in San Francisco and they had a robot, this AI thing, that had made a song. And it plays this song. And I'm like, okay, its notes would make the sand make that pattern, right? It's playing an A. I'm playing an A.
Good. We both play an A.
True.
And yeah. So it's playing a song. And so it would make the sand do the thing. So it would make the water in our body do the thing. But I didn't feel anything. Now, and it was playing a Sting song. I've seen Sting play a song. I was at Sting's house for his 29th wedding anniversary. I played a show at his house. He then came up on stage and about 6 feet from my face, he sang Walking on the Moon. And I had whole body chills. It's one of the best moments of my life.
I can imagine.
And he was hitting the same, he's playing the same A, but there was something, there's an extra quality to music and that's what makes it amazing. That's why live music has got this magic to a recorded song. Like there's something about being in the room. There's something about, I recently went and saw Hans Zimmer, same thing. Like, I love Hans Zimmer music. Dude, when you're in the room.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. Because there's this extra bit to sound and it's, I don't know how, but I know how you describe it, but
he gives it a character.
Yeah,
it is a character of its own. I've always been super impressed with his music too, because he takes the instruments in a different place.
Yeah,
like he uses instruments that you would never expect.
Yeah.
So yeah, I've been super impressed. Like all of those people, I imagine being in their proximity must have been like a transcendent moment. You know, besides just, you know, you being there.
Yeah, but it's not because of all the celebrity of the it's just that guy puts something into those same notes, and it's,
yeah,
whatever that something is, it's you ultimately.
There's a spirit there.
There is a spirit that goes into music. It's like, whoa, and you know, 1,000 people can do an Adele cover. Okay, this is, I've got another like really great story. I've got so many stories, but this is.
That's okay, I'm here for it.
I have a long story about Johnny Cash, but nobody ever believes this, by the way. People want receipts. But nonetheless, when I was really younger, I went to Beale Street and I'd never heard the blues before. And Beale Street is like full of the blues music. And there's a B.B. King blues bar on there. And we went, we had this burger and there's a piano there. And I go and I play this piano and I'm real young. And big guy comes up to me and he's like, you know what song you're playing? And I'm like, yeah, I'm playing Johnny Cash. It's the only blues song I knew. And I was playing Folsom Prison Blues. And he's like, all right. And well, you know who I am? I'm like, no. And he's like, my name's Johnny Cash. And I'm like, oh. And he then told me, he sat with me and he was
extremely nice. And he told me something. He was like, you know the difference between me. He's like, I go everywhere and people sing this song. He's like, do you know what this song's about? And I'm young. And he's saying, you know, this song's about killing a man just to watch him die. Like, that's about the most evil thing you can do. And you're sitting here singing it all timid. He's like, you've got to be that guy. Like, imagine killing a man just to watch him die. Imagine being that evil. Well, that's the singer of that song. That's who's singing that song. So you got to be that. And you got to go find that. And he's like, you know, I spent my whole life, I go around and I go to weddings and this and that. And people are playing this song and it's some pretty girl with a big smile. And I shot a man in Reno just to watch him die. And he's like, it is like the difference between me and everybody else is when I go on stage, I know I'm Johnny Cash. And when they go on stage, they know they're not. And And that's
pretty deep.
That's the quality I'm trying to say is like, it's what you put into the music. Everybody else plays the same notes, but they don't put whatever he puts into it. And it's just you. I say this all the time. Again, I'm in the school. Like, this music is essentially four things. There's rhythm, there's chords, there's melody, and there's you. Mm-hmm. And the you is the most important part. These three things are quite fast to learn. And putting you into it is that comes with a little practice and courage. But that's where all the magic is. We all know that the best pop songs of all time are very simple. It's not because the music's so complicated. It's because they put so much of themselves into that thing.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I think in a lot of careers, we need to understand that as well, that putting you into it is what makes it transcendent. That's what takes it to the next level.
So true.
Yeah. So I'm like, I do voiceover. So what we're taught to do in the beginning by coaches is, you know, do what they tell you to do on the script. And you don't know who you are until probably 10 years in.
Wow.
And then when you figure out who you are and who you are when you speak those words, even though they're someone else's words, that's when you really get somewhere.
Wow. That's an amazing. I mean, I'm looking at the sign right behind you there, says audio branding. And that's inadvertently, that's exactly what we're talking about because, you know, Hans
Zimmer. Because we are each a brand. We are ourselves. Yeah.
This has been part one of our interview. I hope you'll tune in next week for part two. Well, that's the end of this episode. Thanks for listening. And if you like what you heard, why not tell a friend about this podcast? It's available in all the usual locations. Until next time.